All right, we are locked, we are loaded, we are ready to go. Where's the radio legend? Where is Mark Christopher?
This is in Shelton. You can see how much snow is on the ground there.
Wow, look at that.
Really coming down. We thank the PUD out there for letting us have access to this camera. And it shows you how much snow is in parts of Mason County.
That's where Mark Christopher is. Radio legend snowed in today.
He's taking a snow day.
Not to worry, because young Zach managed to get in all the way from Lakewood?
Yep, all the way from Pierce County.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Philip J. from Lake City.
My drive was
not
easy.
Lakewood, Lake City.
Yeah. Phil walked.
I could have ridden
my bicycle. But I 4x4'd it.
It was incredibly hellacious, but I courageously did what was necessary to make it all the way from Bellevue into Seattle today.
Right.
I don't want to dwell on what I had to do to get here. Let's just say it happened.
White knuckle driving.
I won't throw the word hero around. But no.
Not all heroes wear
capes. Hate it when you guys do that. So we always try to move on. Hey, I hope your commute is going okay, and if it's longer than usual, look on the bright side. You get to listen to me longer.
Yeah.
That's always,
yeah, if you're up a couple hundred feet, then you probably got the snow.
Yes. And yesterday was odd. Yesterday, it was either snowing or sunshine.
Yeah, Saturday when this started to break out, I had to get over to Bellevue for a kid's soccer football game and took the Montlake Boulevard down by Husky Stadium, and for about 5 minutes, it was borderline squall as this combination of sleet, hail, and snow was coming down. And I was thinking, I did not dress for this type of weather. But about 5, 8, 10 minutes later, it had all passed.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, like I said, it is freezing out there. Snow is wet, which means the pavement is slick. So do take your time.
Yep. And like we said, in the areas with a bit higher elevation, you definitely probably got some accumulation.
And boy, oh boy, do we have a lot of stuff to talk about here on the Commute with Carlson this morning. I mean, local, statewide, and national. I want to start with an update on, that terrible, terrible, tragic collision crash last week out in Washington, D.C., not far at all from Reagan National Airport. You had the American Airlines flight from Wichita coming in for a landing, and it was struck by a Black Hawk helicopter. And a lot of people speculating with less than complete information, but the speculation's happening all over about how this happened and why. And a lot of people, to be real honest, are kind of tacking their political agendas left and right to the tragedy. Bill Ackman, the fabulously successful investor, he's been in the news as someone who has loudly taken on the political extremism and anti-Semitism within Ivy League enclaves. Anyway, he's outspoken. He's, I guess what you would say now, an anti-liberal independent. He spent about 45 minutes on a call with a former Black Hawk helicopter, currently a pilot for a major airline. And his assessment is that what happened at National Airport when that Black Hawk came under and collided with the American Airlines mid-sized plane coming down for landing, doing everything right, the airplane was due to a, quote, cascading series of errors, in part due to inadequate disclosure from the tower about the location and altitude of the regional aircraft, compounded by inadequate staffing in the tower and the diminished situational awareness of the pilot of the helicopter due to the use of night vision goggles. Okay, let's get into a little more detail here. The Black Hawk helicopter pilot, quote, further explained that automated flight sensors are generally turned off below 1,000 feet as visual flight rules apply, And automated warnings and systems are considered distractions and otherwise increase risk. The pilot went on to explain that the Black Hawk test runs are necessary, because a lot of people have been asking that. Why do they even have these airplanes doing, or these helicopters doing test runs near, right near an airport where you've got all these jets, some of them mid-sized, some of them huge, coming in and out all the time in national airports, a very compact airport? Why would you have helicopters doing test runs there? He said that they are necessary to, quote, prepare for the potential need to evacuate the president or vice president and others in the hierarchy of command to the airport and or secret bunkers in the event of an enemy attack. Ackman says, I found this assessment to be extremely credible, which leads me to believe that this was most certainly a tragic accident. In the conversation with the Black Hawk pilot, he also expressed his concern about how the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, fails to act with sufficient urgency to address serious safety issues that pilots and others have raised for years until there's a disaster. The pilot explained that the FAA's dual missions to promote air travel and safeguard the skies are in conflict, lead to long delays in implementing important safety changes in protocols and equipment as carriers push back against investing money or introducing new procedures that cost money and or time. The pilot, Ackman says, gave me a number of such examples from the past where the FAA delayed acting on pilot concerns until planes went down. He explained that the FAA has been captured by the airline industry, much like the FDA has inappropriately captured and is inappropriately captured and influenced by the pharma lobby. While he generally believes that air traffic control does a good job, he also expressed agreement with Donald Trump in how DEI has injected itself into air traffic control and in pilot recruitment. Now, by the way, before I continue, if you are a pilot, especially if you're a helicopter pilot, or if you've got experience as a helicopter pilot, text me and tell me if you think this makes sense to you. Or you can call, too. We'll open up the phone lines early. We usually don't take many calls on this show, but this is interesting. The number to call or text is 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. We got a lot of pilots who listen to this show, a lot of military, current and former, listen to this show. And I want you to know from you whether this rings true, whether this makes sense to you. Anyway, again, the pilot says that Donald Trump is on to something when he complains about how diversity, equity, and inclusion programs have injected themselves into air traffic control and in pilot recruitment. The pilot, quote, gave examples of having to take over the controls within moments of landing to avoid a crash landing when a co-pilot with inadequate experience, training, and capabilities was too quickly advanced into the cockpit to meet DEI goals. He said the pilot shortage is real, and we need to recruit more candidates. All of the above create a real opportunity for change in U.S. aviation in the Trump administration and speak to the importance of the selection of new leadership for the FAA and a focus on excellence and meritocracy rather than meeting quota goals. Ackman concludes, says, I've always believed that good comes from bad. Let's not let the 67 souls who lost their lives die in vain. Let's make sure this tragedy is a catalyst for important and rapid improvements in U.S. aviation. Okay, does that ring true to you? Again, text us at 206-421-5757. Now, here's a fascinating post by Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk himself, a radio host and also the creator of one of the most robust, influential, powerful political organizations on the right called Turning Point USA. It is far and away more popular than the College Republicans. He posted, the media doesn't know what it's getting into when they pick a fight with Donald Trump over DEI in air travel. Here are the facts. The Obama administration threw out all the results of a merit-based air traffic control hiring test, wrecking the career plans of people who had spent thousands of dollars pursuing that career. Again, the Obama administration threw out all the results of a merit-based air traffic control test. Then the Obama administration created a new test where they intentionally selected for less capable people merely on the hope that they would be less white. All of this has been proven in the filings of an extensive class action lawsuit against the FAA. Charlie Kirk goes on to say, let me repeat that. Democrats didn't simply create a quota system or discriminate based on race. They deliberately worked to make new air traffic controllers dumber, hoping that diversity would be the side effect. That is how obsessed the left is with DEI and how little they care about protecting the lives of flyers. So conservatives should welcome this fight over DEI in aviation. Nothing better represents how evil DEI is and how antithetical it is to life and American success. So I thought you would find both those things kind of interesting as, you know, we continue hearing people speculate. I like the fact that this Black Hawk helicopter pilot, this guy is clearly speaking from, not from a position of ideology, not from political partisanship. He's just speaking from, here's what I know from what I've done. And what I've done is piloted Black Hawk helicopters for a long time. And what I have seen in the cockpit, he is currently a pilot for a major carrier. Okay. You've got 18 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning on the John Carlson Show. You're hearing a lot about the birthright citizenship debate. Actually, you don't hear it. It's a debate from the left. They say it's not a debate. It's so obvious that birthright citizenship, i.e. having a child in the United States, makes that child a citizen, regardless of the immigration status of their parents, regardless of how the parents got here or whether they got here with permission. They have a baby here. That baby's a citizen and has all the rights and privileges therein. Jonathan Turley actually looks at it from both sides, which we will do. We will also look at the issue of tariffs. President over the weekend followed through, and tomorrow we are due to impose 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico, 10% tariffs on China, even though I think of China as a much graver threat. But is Donald Trump bluffing? Apparently, no, he was not bluffing. He's ready to rumble. But what about Canada and Mexico? Are they ready to rumble? They've announced retaliatory tariffs, no doubt about it, and it will cost consumers, no doubt about it, but the American tariffs will hurt much more. Canada wants to talk about it today. Trump administration, okay. Mexico as well. So tomorrow morning, we'll have an idea whether they came to terms or not. I'm going to predict right now they are going to come to terms. We have what I call two big stories of overlooked good news that, again, with so much going on, there's always so much going on here. The Trump administration is still on, you know, warp speed. What was the way Captain Kirk used to say it? Warp speed factor 8.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, he's just going on and on and on at rapid fire pace. But there were two pieces of great news for this country that happened, and a lot of people didn't hear about it or, you know, heard. Yeah, I think I heard a headline, something like that. But it's worth paying attention to. Last week, we told you about the nation's report card, the student tests for 4th and 8th graders put out by the National Association of Education Progress. They've been doing this for generations. One of the states that slid the most, slid downward, Washington. At the very time we spent a record amount of money, pumped in a record amount of money to education, our test scores went down, and it caught the attention of national education analysts. We'll get into that. There were demonstrations and protests around the country. Did you see them from people supporting
I heard that
illegals?
There was one out on Alki yesterday.
Did you see all the Mexican flags?
I did. Yeah, I saw some posts
Mexican
related to that.
Mexican flags. Yeah. John Fetterman says this: Democrats should not be helping to get, you know, should not be focused on conjuring and energizing these protests, they ought to be helping the Republicans get the illegals who are criminals out of this country. He said that's what the Democrats should be doing. Anyway, that's just part of what we have. It's a very busy show. We'll tell you about the prominent NBC journalist who is out as of today. You're listening to the radio program of record, the John Carlson Show. There's Philip J. with a social media sweep coming right around the corner. Good morning. You know, this is one of those songs where everyone assumes it's a Christmas song, very popular during the holidays, but he never mentions Christmas.
Not once in the song.
I mean, no allusion to holidays or holiday lights or Christmas trees or anything else. It's just about snow.
Mm-hmm. Popcorn is a year-round treat. It's what I've always said.
So anyway, those of you who are dealing with inclement weather, hey, man, I identify with you 100%. I drove all the way from Bellevue. The pavement was soaking wet the entire time. Nothing held me back. Philip J. Vandervoort III, what do you got going in the social media suite?
I was pleasantly surprised to see my areas of Seattle and I-5 had been treated for snow, ice-type conditions. So after the Greg Nichols mayoral debacle in Seattle, at least some of the subsequent mayors and leaders are paying attention to that part of it, at least. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. John, I know you've got this story on your radar you're going to get to at some point on today's show. This is the student testing achievement is dropping Washington State eighth graders, and the amount of money that's going into education spending in Washington. Ari Hoffman had a post about this last week. 71% of Washington State's eighth graders are not proficient in math, 69% not at grade level in reading. And I'm looking at a post from the group Safe Seattle, which has been vocal about the problems with homelessness, drug addiction, some of the many policies in Seattle and King County that have failed and only exacerbated that problem. Safe Seattle Handle writes, on the same day I see this headline from Ari Hoffman about how so many of our eighth graders can't read or do math, I get a solicitation in the mail from people asking me to renew two City of Seattle school levies. For decades, we've been told that Washington schools are failing because we don't spend enough money on them. We don't pay teachers, or we have buildings that aren't modern enough, etc. And for decades, voters have been buying that argument and voting the schools more money, and yet everything keeps getting worse.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Just one slight clarification.
Yeah.
When schools are doing better, they say, you see, that's why you need to keep investing in these good results. Keep a good thing going. Mm-hmm. When schools do poorly, you see what happens when you underfund the schools? That's why schools need more money.
It's a big ruse.
In other words, it's always more money.
Yeah.
Whether schools are doing better or schools are doing worse, it's always more money.
Are we going to look in the mirror and ask for some accountability, whether it's at the teacher administration level, at the parent and student level? Where are we going to look for answers? Now, February, we're into February, and it is Black History Month. I have some black history for everybody. Do you know the name Daniel Hale Williams? And if not, why not? Daniel Hale Williams is an American surgeon and hospital founder, a black American. He was the first person to found a private hospital. Provident Hospital was the first non-segregated hospital in the United States.
Where was it?
I think it was in or around Chicago. I have a little bit more on that as well. Provident also had an associated nursing school for African Americans. He is known for being the first to perform a successful heart surgery.
Whoa.
Daniel Hale Williams. What? He was born in 1856.
Okay.
In 1880, he entered Chicago Medical College, now known as Northwestern University Medical School. Pretty prominent. His education was funded by a woman who was a prominent activist and leader of Chicago's black community. Her name's Mary Jane Richardson Jones. And for Daniel Hale Williams, after graduation from Northwestern in 1883, he opened his own medical office in Chicago, Illinois, and in 1891 founded Provident Hospital. And it also provided a training residency for doctors and training school for nurses in Chicago.
How long was he with us?
He lived until 1931.
How about that?
So 1856, he was born, died in 1931, Daniel Hale Williams.
So here's what is wrong.
First successful heart surgery.
I think a lot of people are hearing this name for the first time.
Probably.
I would love to know why all our kids in school, hear about Nicole Hannah Jones and Ibram Kendi and Al Sharpton.
Yeah.
Why don't they all know David Hale Williams, Dr. David Hale Williams?
Daniel Hale Williams.
Daniel Hale Williams.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's an instructive story.
Or George Washington Carver or mm-hmm. Booker T. Washington. Sure. These are legendary
innovators, right?
Figures.
Innovators, yeah.
People who carried themselves with great dignity and made life better for many, many millions of people of all races, of all races. It's 31 minutes after 6 o'clock. When we get back, I've got a few more details of what Philip Jay was talking about with these sliding test scores. Why are they especially troublesome here in Washington State? Some Q&A on this coming right up. So in case you overlooked it, and a lot of people did, the Grammys were last night. As you know, every 3.5 weeks, there's a major awards ceremony of some kind. So, you know, we just had the Golden Globes. We're going to have the Oscars in a few weeks. And now last night it was the Grammys. That's the best awards for music. A couple of things very interesting. The Rolling Stones, these guys are in their 80s. The Rolling Stones got Album of the Year?
Rock Album of the Year, yeah.
Rock Album of the Year.
This is one of the songs off that album, the Hackney Diamonds.
Hackney Diamonds Tour.
Is the album. That's the tour that they went on last year, yep.
So, I mean, those guys are still slaying it. You know, interesting to me was Beyonce got Best Country Album
right.
yeah. of the Year. And it is a good one. It is a good one. Country music's really changed. There is now, you know, they've synthesized country music and rock music.
Yeah, and pop a little bit in there. There's kind of a pop country
and pop
genre.
Yeah. Kenny Chesney. And now one of the fastest growing genres of country music, subsets of country music, is country rap. Have you guys heard this? Country.
Maybe not specifically, hip-hop. But yeah.
I think it can be shortened to crap.
No, it's actually.
Wait a second.
It's very, very. I think intriguing. It was. I heard some, and I went, I'm actually kind of surprised. This sounds kind of cool.
And if you don't think it sounds kind of cool, listen to 101.5 Hank FM. They play none of that.
There will be
they
no,
play
no country
classic
rap
country.
On Cranking the Hank.
All right. And it's just a complete coincidence that it's one of our company's radio stations here. All right. Let us talk about how to do less with more. The authority when it comes to doing less with more, well, that would be our public schools. The nation's report card came out last week. This is where the National Association of Educational Progress submits a report, all 50 states, measuring national and state level achievement in math and reading. So that's what they focus on, math, reading, fourth grade, eighth grade. They released the results last week, and it was not pretty. 71% of Washington 8th graders, 71% are not proficient in math. 10 years ago, 58% were not proficient. That's nothing to brag about. We slid more than almost any other state. The Seattle Times helpfully pointed out, because the public school establishment always says the same thing. Oh, COVID. You know, it's COVID. Oh, the COVID is what killed us. Actually, it wasn't COVID that hurt kids. It was the lockdowns that were far longer in the public schools than they needed to be. And the masking policies went on far longer than they should have. So this was at the demand of public school unions and, frankly, public school bureaucrats. Most private schools opened up a good 6 months or a year before the public schools did. So, yeah, there was a loss. But to their credit, the Seattle Times says, students' test scores have been declining in a trend that predates pandemic school lockdowns. Predates. In other words, this simply accelerated a trend that was already underway here in Washington. And then they correctly point out that this decade of decline occurred as state and federal education spending shot up significantly. And yet, during that decade, between 2013 and 2024, the share of students in Washington State performing below basic proficiency in math increased by 20%. Here's the other thing that should alarm people. The percentage of eighth graders performing at proficiency or above shrank by 12 points over the past decade, which was almost twice as large a slide as the national rate of decline. This during a period of record funding. And of course, all we get from Superintendent Chris Rakedahl is happy talk. All the data compels us to take a much deeper examination of our approach to math in late elementary and middle school. For Washington State to maintain our economic excellence in software, engineering, advanced manufacturing, and other sectors, we have to make significant gains in elementary and middle school math in order to set up our students for maximum success. Yeah, here's what you should be saying. You should be explaining why we're sliding while you've been in office, Chris. This is on your watch. We're sliding faster than other states. On your watch. Quit blaming money. You've had a record amount of money to spend. Look how you're spending it. We're not mastering the fundamentals. Here's the other thing that's very interesting. Isn't Washington supposed to be one of the best educated states in the country? I mean, you keep hearing the percentage of people in Seattle, King County with college degrees is among the nation's highest, and postgraduate degrees and the like. And yet Washington State, even though we now spend over $20,000 per student, even though we more than doubled what we spend on kids, even though that's far above what most private school tuition is, our test scores continued to slide. The NAEP actually spotlighted Washington State. They mentioned that several states, and they're all what you would call red states, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, West Virginia, students in those states saw real gains alongside the increased funding in their schools. In contrast, Arizona, California, Florida, Massachusetts, Oregon, and Washington all continue to lose ground in both the key metrics of fourth grade reading and eighth grade math, despite skyrocketing spending. Declines in eighth grade math are especially concerning, as those scores predict lifelong earnings and the state's future economic growth. Take Washington State, for example, where per pupil spending has essentially doubled in the last decade, far, far outpacing inflation, while eighth grade math scores are in freefall. So spending in the last 10 years, up 110%. Inflation during that period of time, up 35%. So spending is three times greater than inflation. Three times greater than inflation. Reading skills are down more than 5 points. Math scores are down nearly or over 12 points. So that's what we got for what we spent. That should be the headline in every newspaper. That should be the lead story every television newscast. We just spent three times more than inflation in the last 10 years for sliding test scores in both reading and math. We are literally getting worse schools, worse results for what we are spending. So they said that at NAEP, the nation's report card, they said an obvious place to start. State leaders need to take a hard look at their own spending and outcomes. I'll tell you something, you know, this could be a difference between a Bob Ferguson and a Jay Inslee. Bob Ferguson is a much smarter guy than Jay Inslee. Jay Inslee just went along with the teachers' union. He's a political lifer. He's been, you know, carrying them. They've been carrying him for his entire political career. Ferguson can be, if he wants to be, a little more independent. We will see, because there's absolutely no justification whatsoever, no rational explanation for doing this poorly with this massive increase in funding. All right, our good buddy Lars Larson is back. He's away for a little while, not feeling too good. Well, we got him, and the commute will continue. Un momento, the John Carlson Show. Good morning, So the Rolling Stones and the Beatles both won a Grammy last night.
Is it 1965 or 2025?
Yeah, this is not a story from the 1960s.
Wow. No, 60 years of...
This anyway. Was the first Grammy to be given to a song that features an AI-assisted track also, enhancing John Lennon's vocals.
Now and Then from the Beatles, a long-lost tune that they resurrected, brought back, injected a little AI, and boom, it takes home a Grammy. All right, that's so long ago, I don't even know if Lars Larson remembers it.
No, it's even before my time. So do you take the little Grammy statue and put it on top of the supercomputer, or where do you display this one?
Oh, I'm not sure. How are you feeling? You were down for
better.
A little while. What happened?
I highly recommend you avoid influenza A, because this year it's a beast. And my doctor, she was just not surprised at all. I said, does it leave you just completely wrung out? I have never been, even when I had COVID, I didn't feel as just completely wrung out. So if you get it, go to your doctor and get Tamiflu. It does tend to shorten those things up, but it was a beast.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Lars Larson demanding all of you get the flu vaccine as soon as possible.
No, get the Tamiflu, which is a treatment. And by the way, it can be used prophylactically as well. So anyway.
But by the way, did you get a flu shot this year? Or
I did not. And then everybody I know who got the flu shot also got the flu, because apparently they try to shoot for the formulation of one of maybe 100 different variants. And it's a crapshoot.
So I was going to say, I was going to use that exact term. It's an absolute crapshoot. Anyway, glad you are feeling better. Did you hear John Fetterman? John Fetterman, while all these demonstrations are happening, I'm sure you had them in Portland. We had them throughout Seattle, L.A. They block freeways, waving Mexican flags.
Yep. Shows you want an insurrection. That is an attempt to overthrow local civilian authority, because who were they combating? In Seattle, the police. In Salem, the police. In Los Angeles, the police. So tell me that this is not a mob demanding that they overthrow the laws and the law enforcement people. Tell me that's not an insurrection by Democrat definition.
Well, I will tell you this. Tom Homan doesn't really care what they do. He's not going to be deterred. He's not going to be stopped. And he's going to keep doing what he needs to do.
How long will the citizens of Salem and Seattle and Los Angeles put up with their resources, which we're told are in short supply, being diverted to benefit foreign nationals who now demand things from America because they're here?
Yes. Well, I would tell you, in a few minutes, we're going to play John Fetterman, Democratic senator from Pennsylvania, liberal, who says, what are you guys doing? If anything, you should be helping Trump. He's trying to get rid of the illegals who are criminals, who are thugs, who are dangerous. Don't be protesting. You should be helping him. Anyway, we'll get to that un momento as the Commute with Carlson continues. Welcome back, Lars Larson, noon to three. Well, good morning. How is your commute? By the way, if you are having a rough time of it today, then if you want to share some information to help your fellow KVI listeners who are out there commuting, if there's anything you want them to know, traffic alerts that you haven't heard so far on the news, go ahead and text them to us, or you can call us, and we will pass that information along to our fellow listeners. You know, Zach got in, I got in, Phil got in, but our good friend, the radio legend Mark Christopher, snowed in, did not get in.
Too treacherous.
And so... If
and you mean the Shelton Mason County area?
Yeah,
that's where Mark is.
They're having a tough time of it. Of course, anyone listening to this show who heard Cliff Mass on this program knows that he predicted exactly that.
Yeah.
That he said, north of Linwood and south of Olympia, you're going to see some pretty rough weather.
Yeah, and that it would be spotty in a lot of places. We're watching some of the local TV channels, one channels right now in Tacoma with some sidewalks that look fairly snowy. Whatcom County is the other area. I saw a Doppler radar of a swath of snow that was falling over who must have been either Orcas and San Juan Island, that corridor in the North Sound, and then kind of on to the northeast over Bellingham and into Whatcom County. So North Bend is the other area where we've seen some of the TV cameras on this morning with snow and ice on the ground.
Yes. So, again, maybe there's not much snow on the ground where you are, but there might be slick pavement. It might be, you know, might be illusory that it's a safe commute when, in fact, it's icy. So, again, if there's anything you want your fellow listeners to know, if there's a traffic snarl or an obstacle, then go ahead, call us, 206-421-5757, or text us, 206-421-5757.
Other quick advisory, lots of schools are on two-hour delayed start this morning.
Yes. So, more information there at comonews.com on late starts. All right. So with that understood, let us move forward. There were demonstrations throughout the country yesterday opposing the raids by Immigration Customs Enforcement to get illegal immigrants who have criminal records, who are committing crimes in this country, out of the country. Again, you've got people marching, blocking traffic, which is always happens with left-wing demonstrations, complaining, waving Mexican flags, far more Mexican flags being waved than American flags, that they want ICE out of there. Get this. While they're here illegally, they're demanding that ICE, American Immigration Customs Enforcement, that they leave, that they get out. If I were Tom Homan, I'd say, well, I guess we need to call in reinforcements. Just double up when they pull stuff like this. But anyway, I found this very interesting because, what is it, the John Fetterman, who is liberal Democratic senator from Pennsylvania, was being interviewed by Fox News host Shannon Bream, and he said the Democrats should be doing precisely the opposite. They should be helping Trump. Again, now this is what I have been saying. If the Democrats were smart and they want to get back on the side of America, the country that no longer trusts them, they would say, you know, we disagree with Donald Trump on, you know, pathway to citizenship. We disagree with him on DACA, but we don't disagree that if you're in this country undocumented and you're committing crime, you need to get out. But they won't do it. Again, the Democrats can't say no to their extreme left. Here's Fetterman, again, the host. Here's Shannon Bream.
So what obligations do or don't you think local officials have with respect to the feds and these deportations?
I hope every local official would agree that anyone here, any of the migrants that are here with criminal backgrounds or engaging in criminal behavior, I think they should support that. Now, if ICE comes to round them up, I hope they would provide that kind of support. I certainly would never support terrorizing otherwise innocent migrants in those kinds of situations or kicking in a door at a school. But I think you can all agree that every migrant here with a criminal background or engaging in criminal behavior should all needs to go.
That is not the position of most Democrat elected officials. John Fetterman, what he said makes perfect sense, perfectly reasonable. It's not conservative. There's nothing right wing about what you heard. It's just simple common sense. And he's the odd man out in his own party. Now, Christine Welker from NBC was interviewing Kristi Noem, who used to be the governor of South Dakota. Now she's Donald Trump's new director of Homeland Security. And she's been riding shotgun on a lot of these ICE raids. And Christine Welker, you know, asking, you know, earnestly, you know, what can you do to allay the fears of people who are so concerned that that even if they're in the country legally, they're going to be picked up? What can you tell people about this? And I love Kristi Noem's response. Here, have a listen.
Let me ask you, I've been talking to people who are here legally, and they have expressed concerns. They say they are carrying, in some cases, their documents around with them. Some of them are afraid to go to churches because ICE agents are now going into churches and schools to carry out these deportation operations.
No, they're not. No, they are not. Name the church. Name the school. Okay. What Tom Homan said is that if there's a violent illegal someone with a criminal background who thinks that he can hide in a church or hide in a school, the answer is no. No, you can't. There's no safe haven. Just as an accused bank robber or an accused killer can't run into a school or a church and say, ollie, ollie, income free, you know, you can't touch me here. He says there's no safe haven. But they haven't done it because they don't want to do it unless there's an extraordinary circumstance. And yet here you have Christine Welker. Well, they're going into schools and churches. No, they are not. Stop lying once and for all. Anyway, wait until you hear how Christine Noem handles this.
Do people who are here legally need to be carrying around paperwork? And can you guarantee that people who are here legally won't be wrongfully detained?
Kristen, I would say that if I've heard that expressed by people that are legal citizens of the United States, it's because the media has perpetuated that fear. The media has said that that's a possibility. There's nothing from this administration, from President Trump, or from any of the law enforcement individuals in these communities that has said that they need to walk around and be concerned about that at all. We, the citizens of the United States, are confident that finally, after four long years of having a president in the White House that ignored federal law and endangered their communities, that there's a different man in charge now. There's a man in charge who loves this country, is going to help make their communities safer. And these citizens that live here are thrilled. In fact, when I was in New York City earlier this week and in several cities since then, the people walking by us on the streets were thanking our officers. They were thanking these investigators and those that were taking these dangerous criminals out for being there.
Right on. That is the real America. Most rank-and-file Americans, most rank-and-file Americans are thanking the police for helping ICE. They're thanking ICE for being there. Many cops are thanking ICE for being there. The people who are complaining are, again, the activists on the left, the people who are marching, waving Mexican flags. Okay, these people are losing. They're losing because they deserve to lose. They don't care about this country. They don't love this country. This is a group of people that essentially owned the Biden administration and had wide open borders and welcomed as many illegals into this country as they could stuff in, as they could get in. They welcomed them. And now that the door is closing, now that Donald Trump has unleashed Tom Homan, who is an impeccably credentialed and impressive and honorable man, honored by the Obama administration for his work in immigration law enforcement. And he says, we are going to have mass deportation in America. Here are our three priorities starting off. Number one, people who are in this country illegally who are criminals. Number two, people who are in this country illegally who are security risks. Number three, people who are in this country illegally who've been ordered out by a federal judge who are just ignoring the judge. So, that's what, by the way, that's 1.3 million right there. 1.3 million people, illegals in this country, have been ordered out by a federal judge or federal immigration judge, and they have refused to leave. And they're not all people who came up in the southern border. Some of them just overstayed their student visas. They overstayed their tourist visas. In other words, they looked for a way, a mechanism to get into the country, and once they got it, they just ignored the law from there on in. And Tom Homan says, you're leaving. I mean, here's how bad it is. You had Dow Constantine actually tried to deny and got away with it for about a year or two, actually denied Immigration and Customs Enforcement permission to fly people out of the country who'd been ordered out by an immigration judge out of Boeing Field, because the county controls Boeing Field. And we have we had a wonderful U.S. attorney named Brian Moran, who sued King County and prevailed and won so that ICE could keep using Boeing Field to fly people who've been deported mostly for committing violent crimes out of this country. But again, the ideology is so strong that there were murderers, there were child molesters that Dow Constantine was trying to keep in this country, rather than allow them to be deported because they came here illegally. That's how sick that ideology is. That's how extreme that ideology is. all these terrible people you're hearing about that they picked up and are deporting, they knew where they were. How'd they find them so quickly? Because they knew where they were, just that Biden wouldn't order them out because the people around Biden didn't want them out. So I love where we are going as a country right now. And again, the one guy with common sense here, the one guy is John Fetterman, Democrat out of Pennsylvania, who says, for heaven's sakes, the Democrats should be helping the Republicans get these people out right now. You can disagree on all the other stuff on immigration. What are you disagreeing on this for? Here is Jake Tapper talking with Tim Kaine, who you might remember was Hillary Clinton's vice presidential running mate back in 2016.
The Democratic National Committee picked a new head over the weekend on the matter of the Democratic Party. We saw some stark numbers this week about how the American people view the Democratic Party. You see there, this is a Quinnipiac poll, 57% of the American people have an unfavorable view of the Democratic Party, only 31% favorable. This is the worst number for the Democratic Party since Quinnipiac University began asking the question, and it's not an outlier. A recent CNN poll found a 33-year low favorable rating with the Democratic Party. Why is your party so staggeringly unpopular with the public?
Jake, you know me. I'm a Virginian. I know one state well and not so well the other 49.
This is a national issue, not a 49-state issue, okay? He's asking you, why is your party toxic? And, of course, he's going to talk about, well, here in Virginia.
In Virginia, we've gone from one of the most ruby red states in the country to now having put electoral votes behind Democrats 5 elections in a row. I just won my reelection by a sizable margin against Donald Trump's hand-picked Republican opponent. And I'll tell you how we've done it. We focus on the economy. This is what we do in Virginia, and I think sometimes national Democrats don't.
Oh, well, I know that Donald Trump focused on the economy. And I kept hearing from Team Biden that, hey, the economy is actually doing really well, that inflation has really come down, that people should realize, just look at the numbers. Well, yeah, they are looking at the numbers at the store, not the numbers from the Federal Reserve, not the numbers put out by the Treasury Department, not the numbers put out by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They're looking at the numbers at the store. They're looking at the numbers of the bills when they open their power bill, when they open their insurance statement, when they open their credit card statement with a floating interest rate. That's what they're looking at. It is coming up here on 720, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandenberg the Third, right around the corner with a social media sweep. Good morning. All right. Philip J. Vandenberg the Third has an easy way about him doing that social media sweep every morning. But it takes a lot of hard work and discerning to make it happen. What do you got going this morning?
That song is like the one song I can play on the piano. It's a great, great piano melody. Yeah. Let's ease into the social media sweep. Thank you very much, Lionel Richie, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Let's go to the Seattle Times. They posted this about Donald Trump's tariffs on Canada, Mexico, China.
Yeah.
Seattle Times promotes the story written by columnist John Talton. President Donald Trump's tariffs will hurt everything from Washington farmers and seaports to customers and businesses. And ooh, if only the Seattle Times had this kind of journalistic and editorial courage and conviction to write the same story about Inslee's Climate Commitment Act and all the other tax hikes that have spiked our affordability problems in this state.
The same
roasted. We're
totally roasted.
The same writer actually endorsed the Climate Commitment Act.
Just jackassery over there, man. God dang. Did that one last hour. So let's move on to this one as it wraps up. We kind of wrapped up most of the Senate confirmation hearings for the Trump cabinet officials. Mm-hmm. And this one I saw posted last week, and this really rung true with me. I don't know how anyone could watch 5 minutes of a Senate confirmation hearing and come away with any impression other than that we are governed by complete imbeciles. And after you see enough of those congressional confirmation hearings, you pretty much have to arrive at a similar conclusion.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. Absolutely. Right.
Now, one more here. This one comes from the Babylon Bee. Progressive really wants communism, but is worried there won't be gluten-free bread lines.
I love Babylon Bee.
Oh, the dilemma of being a communist, right? Okay. Am I going to be able to get cage-free chicken eggs at a dollar a piece?
No.
In communist America.
No. By the way, you know where you can get eggs for, you know, closer to, you know, $5 or $6 instead of, you know, $9 or $10?
Yeah.
Trader Joe's.
No kidding. Okay.
Trader Joe's.
All right. Yeah, Trader Joe's has usually been pretty good about holding down prices. I'll give them that.
Now, in Trump's America, have they brought back Trader Jose's?
Trader Giotto. It's the other one that they like to use. Now,
here's the deal. Do I think there's going to be a trade war between us and Mexico and Canada? Mm-hmm. No.
Based on the tariff stuff?
Yeah, because it doesn't help anyone.
Mm-hmm. Is this saber-rattling then?
Is Donald Trump going to cry uncle? No.
Oh, okay.
Which means that on the issues that Trump cares about, yeah, we're talking immigration and drug enforcement, north and south of the border.
Right.
He's going to get his way. So we're going to end up with better policies north and south, and there's not going to be tariffs. So the legitimate threat of imposing the tariff, the willingness to follow through, results in no tariffs, yeah, but a much better border policy. So is that a bad thing? No. It is a very good thing, and I think that's what's going to come out of this so-called, you know, trade showdown, showdown.
See how the showdown goes. Matthew Modine's a pretty popular and somewhat well-known actor. Is of late was in Stranger Things, was one of the things he was in.
Yeah.
But this year marks the 40th anniversary of a movie he was in as basically a young actor, portrayed a high school student in a movie called Vision Quest back in 1985.
Played a high school wrestler from Spokane,
exactly,
if I'm not mistaken.
And it was all set in Spokane. And Matthew Modine posted on social media that he's coming back to Spokane. And next month, he's going to be in Spokane, returning to Spokane for a special 40th anniversary screening of the movie Vision Quest. If you live in the area, he writes, please join me and special guests at the 1600-seat Fox Theater in Spokane, Sunday, March 9th. And
cool.
If you go to the Fox Theater Spokane.org page, if Vision Quest was a movie that made an impact on you as a kid in the 80s, might be something you want.
Then you might finally have a reason to go to Spokane.
So Fox Theater Spokane.org is hosting it. You can get ticket information and anything else you want there, if
yes,
that's something that you'd be into.
So Matthew Modine, we're happy for you that you got Vision Quest. On the other hand, Tom Cruise got Top Gun. About that same time.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah.
About true. That same time.
85, 86, exactly.
All right. It is coming up on 7:30, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. You know what? There is some awfully good news that I bet swept by you and you didn't even notice. Overlooked good news of the week. I've got three examples. They're all coming up. As the Commute with Carlson continues, Talk Radio 570 KVI. 25 minutes to 8 o'clock in the morning on the Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Earlier this morning, we were talking about the stunning results from the National Assessment of Education Progress in this country, the NAEP, which does the nation's report card. They look at fourth graders, eighth graders. They look at math. They look at reading. And what they find in Washington State is that over 70% of our eighth graders are not proficient in math, which is a slide of 13 percentage points in the last 10 years. Really stunning, especially when we have poured record amounts of spending into education. I'm not going to bury you with the numbers. I'm just going to say this. Spending in 10 years went up 110%. That's three times higher than inflation. 110% increase in spending, and both reading and math scores went down. All right. One of the problems with one-party government, one-party regime in Olympia, is that instead of holding officials accountable, since they're all of one party, they cover for each other. If we had divided government in Olympia, if we had a Republican legislature or a Republican governor, then they would be demanding that the superintendent of public instruction, Chris Reichdahl, that he show up, the state school superintendent, and explain these poor numbers. But instead, they just talk about other things. They just kind of ignore it. Well, someone who is not ignoring our terrible education results for what we've been spending, the awful value for the money we spend, is Travis Couture. Travis is a rising star in state politics. We enjoy having him on the show from time to time. Republican state house member out of Mason County, where I understand it's a wee bit snowy, Travis.
Yeah, it's there's some snow falling still and some ice on the road, so I hope everyone's driving safe this morning.
Well, our radio legend, Mark Christopher, who lives by Lake Limerick, was not able to get in here today. So it's pretty rough out there, I understand. He's in Shelton. Anyway, you did something that I found really unusual. The Democrats as a party are beholden to the state teachers union. The state teachers union hates school choice, where parents can decide where their kids go to school, not bureaucrats, and they always defeat it. In fact, they even try and strangle the number of charter schools. But you've got a school choice bill that's actually going to get a hearing on Thursday morning, even though the other party controls the committee process. How'd you get this? How'd you get that through?
Very carefully, John. You know, honestly, I just think that a lot of people in our communities and across our state, school choice is growing across the nation. Over half, almost like a 3/4 of the states now have some kind of school choice policy. It's growing in popularity, especially after the pandemic. And people want choices. This is America. This is what it's all about. People want the choice of where to send their kids to get the education that best fits the needs of their families and their kids. And they want, you mentioned the national report card. People want their kids to learn how to do math and learn how to read and want to be safe in their schools. Especially in a time where the Democrats in the legislature are trying to erase the Parents' Bill of Rights, to add more DEI and more wokeness into our schools that has caused massive disenrollments in public schools. And the great thing about school choice is it is a choice. You can choose to send your kids to homeschool, to private school, or you can continue to choose your kid, send your kids to public schools. That's the beauty of it. The dollar should follow the student like a backpack on their back, giving families and empowering them to have more choices about what best fits their needs. And frankly, there's a lot of myths that need to be busted with teachers' unions and everything else. School choice is very popular in a lot of other states and growing in popularity, and we don't want to get left behind as a state. We don't want to get left behind because we're training our future workforce and our kids, and if other states have school choice and we don't, then that's a selling point for other people to move somewhere else. We don't want that to happen. We want to keep our kids right here and give them the best educational outcomes possible.
Okay, you mentioned correctly that people are leaving, parents are pulling their kids out of the public schools, enrollment is actually down. How much is it down?
It's down significantly. We never even really recovered after the pandemic. It did kind of flatline a little bit, but it can just continues to go down. And then also you can see in the data, more levies and bonds, those campaigns are being lost than ever before. Yeah. There's a stunning lack of trust in our communities. So the enrollment is significantly down, and it really follows the NAEP scores that you talked about, which are the worst in three decades here in Washington State. And as you mentioned, the spending has never been higher in our K-12 system. So we're just not getting the outcomes for the money that we're investing.
Well, we're getting worse. I mean, this is a hallmark of the political left. When progressives, not just liberals, but progressives start dictating policies on homelessness, they'll spend a whole lot of money and homelessness will get worse. Crime, things will get worse. Drugs, things will get worse. Education, well, things are worse which is why you've got a bill to change and challenge that status quo. Tell our listeners what will change if Travis Couture's bill, House Bill 1140, becomes law.
Yeah, House Bill 1140 is essentially education savings accounts. And this account is basically the backpack on the child's back that I talked about, that where the dollars go into the account, and you could choose, parents can choose wherever school or educational alternative that they want to go and spend those dollars on. And what's great about it is that we're funding students and not systems and bloated bureaucracies. Like you mentioned, we spend billions and billions of dollars on a K-12 system that doesn't deliver any measurably good outcomes, like 70% of our kids not being able to do math at grade level in our state. And so parents really want this. And essentially, how it would look, John, is a separate entity. It wouldn't be OSPI. You wouldn't even actually need to have the state legislature fund ESAs, because I've created a B&O tax credit where people paying their B&O taxes can make a choice to fund these ESAs, much like our Main Street program and much like other B&O or tax credit programs in other states. Okay, that way, if a Democrat legislature does not want to fund ESAs, then it wouldn't even be up to them. It would be up to taxpayers.
Well, that was my next question, which is how they are funded. By the way, what is the reaction among Democrats, the majority party by far? What is their reaction to these terrible test scores and the fact that they just poured more money into schools than ever before? Again, 110% in 11 years.
Yeah, I think their reaction is cognitive dissonance. I mean, if you listen to the Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins, at the beginning of session, she claims that we have the best education system in all of the states. We have one of the best education systems in the world. But the problem is she measures that by how much money we spend and how much we pay teachers. We do pay one of the highest salaries to teachers in all 50 states. And we do spend some of the most money on K-12 education in all 50 states. But what she misses and what they don't seem to see is the failing outcomes. And not only that, it's not just educational outcomes. The mental and behavioral health of kids in our schools, the suicide ideation has never been higher. The hopelessness, which is actually a thing that we measure, the hopelessness of 12th graders in our K-12 system is at an all-time low.
Because?
And because after we came out of the pandemic, we locked kids into their homes, and we didn't do anything for them.
Well, wait, but no, what NAAP says, this trend started before COVID. So what I'm trying to get to is we're spending all this money, and we have really nice school facilities. Why so much failure? Why so many disappointing results on test scores and aptitude tests?
Well, I think that's interesting. You can actually look at those NAEP scores, and you can mark around the 2013-2015 era, and the score started going down, and then we hit the pandemic, and then they plummeted. And one of the reasons I think you could point at the phase out at exactly that time of No Child Left Behind. You can point at a lot of different policies. We just don't expect anything from our kids anymore. We let them run their own education. The adults aren't in charge anymore. There's less school discipline. And that was really the beginning of a host of different policies, whether it be Common Core, whether it be all sorts of, you know, some of this, what people would call this DEI stuff in schools. I mean, people have lost trust in it, but and that's because it's not actually giving the outcomes that we need.
Well, I'll tell you what it seems to me that has gone wrong is that if the one thing that every skill, physical and artistic and intellectual, every skill has in common is that it begins with a mastery of fundamentals. And I get the feeling that our schools don't emphasize, public schools don't emphasize the fundamentals of reading, writing, what we used to call arithmetic, basic math, that we used to. that there's other things that are allowed to distract and take away time and whatnot, and discipline standards have slipped. Am I correct?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. I mean, people should think about it like a three-legged stool in schools. One leg is your basic education, your core education, the things that you're talking about, the basic fundamentals. One is career pathways for what happens when you leave out of school. And the other third leg of the stool is this like mental behavioral health, social emotional learning stuff. And that leg has essentially taken over the entire stool. That last one, the social emotional learning, the mental and behavioral health. And that's one of the things we spent millions and millions and millions of dollars on that stuff.
So why is mental health worse
over our schools? Well, that's a great question that we've been asking OSPI. You know, we have tons of programs over the years meant to make this better.
Okay.
But instead, there's no measurable outcome. There's no KPIs. It just continues to get worse. And we just keep dumping money into a black hole and expecting it to get better. But the problem, John, is that schools should be educating. Teachers should be teaching. We shouldn't be a mental health clinic, and we shouldn't be a hospital either.
Well, I love this bill, H. Bill 1140. Sets up educational accounts that parents can use to send their kids to any school they choose, which basically just empowers working class and poor parents, because rich parents already have this ability. So wouldn't it be nice to extend that? Travis Couture, another great bill, and he's going to have a hearing, and we'll talk to him again on Friday. He's going to tell us how it went. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Back we are, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Got a busy text line here on the Commute with Carlson this morning. We'll be sharing with you, as well as there's been some great good news that got hardly any attention, stuff that I know you would want to know about. I'm going to share that with you right after your 8 o'clock headlines this morning on this morning's commute. For instance, did you know that 6 Americans were set free, hostages, set free over the weekend because of diplomacy by the Trump administration? Did you know that we just kicked the blankety-blank out of ISIS in Somalia? Did you know that federal employees in federal agencies around the country have been told to remove the personal pronoun feature from their email signature? Did you know all this stuff? We'll tell you in detail what happened and why, as a very busy third hour of the Commute with Carlson is straight ahead of us here. You're right where you need to be. Here come your 8 o'clock headlines. What? Hour number 3 already? My goodness sakes. Ladies and gentlemen, John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. If your commute's a little longer than usual, well, that means we get to spend more time together. So there's a little good news in that. In any case, hey, listen, do drive carefully for the conditions, and the conditions are the pavement is wet and it is probably more slick than usual, might even be icy in places. Please be careful. You might have a more dangerous commute than you might think, because you don't see any snow and you don't see any ice, but that's sometimes an illusion. It is often there. Okay. The election was November 5th, so we have had 3 months almost, 3 months on the verge, and I don't think that the Democratic Party has learned anything. Their popularity is at least a 30-year low, and part of the reason for that is a lot of people who were nominal Democrats, meaning, yeah, they prefer to vote for the Democrat, but, you know, they seem to be completely captivated with or held captive by the cultural kooks in their own party, the gender zealots, the people who can't get race out of their head. They're trying to replace civil rights with race activism. The people who think that the more open the border, the better. So here's the latest example. Over the weekend, the Democrats had their election for Who's going to be the new Democratic National Chairman and who will be their vice chair? Before they could, they elected Ken Martin, he's from Minnesota, to be their chairman. He's been involved within the Democratic Party, what you would call a Democratic Party insider for many, many years. So a lot of people knew him. There's a comfort level there. And then before they could hold the race for vice chair, well, they had a major issue they had to deal with. Here, have a listen.
The rules specify that when we have a gender non-binary candidate or officer, the non-binary individual is counted as neither male nor female, and the remaining six offices must be gender balanced. With the results of the previous four elections, our elected officers are currently two male and two female. In order to be gender balanced, we must elect one male, one female, and one person of any gender. So again, this is what we have to do for this vice chair race. We have to elect one male, one female, and one person of any gender. To ensure our process accounts for male, female, and non-binary candidates, we conferred with our RBC co-chair, our LGBT caucus co-chair, and others to ensure that the process is inclusive and meets the gender balance requirements in our rules. To do this, our process will be slightly different than the one outlined to you earlier this week. But I hope you will see that in practice, it is simple and transparent.
Gee, I wonder why... I wonder why these guys lost.
I couldn't tell if he was asking or if he was telling people how it was supposed to be.
Gee, I wonder why they lost. This is how the Democrats were conducting themselves. And leading up to that, when they were having interviews with the various candidates for chairman and vice chairman, here's Jonathan Capehart. He is with MSNBC, PBS, Washington Post. And he was doing kind of a Q&A with the candidates, you know, show of hands, and then he would ask a question. Here's what he asked them.
In this round, so I'm going to, I have a show of hands. How many of you believe that racism and misogyny played a role in Vice President Harris's defeat? Okay.
All the hands are up. There's like nine people. All the hands.
That's good. You all pass.
Yeah, it must have been racism. It must have been sexism. Must have been misogyny. Probably both. Now, I think, do I think that there were some people who voted against Kamala Harris because of her race? Yeah, I think there were. Were there people who voted against her because of her gender? Yeah, there was. Were there many, many more people who voted for her because of her race and gender? You bet. You bet. Barack Obama was actually pretty candid about this when he was running, and of course, media, almost invariably white liberals, would say, what is it like running for president? Is your race holding you back? Is your race a barrier? Can a black man win in America? And Obama just said, I'm sure there's some people voting against me because I'm black, but there's also a lot of people who are going to vote for me for that reason. In other words, he's being honest, being candid. So I guarantee you that there were probably a lot more people who wanted to vote for the first woman president or the first woman president of color than there were people who wouldn't vote for her, who otherwise would have, but wouldn't vote for her because of her race, because of her gender. They can't get it out of their heads. When they lose, it must be misogyny. It must be racism. What else could it be? And it also doesn't help when they did hold their race for vice president of the Democratic National Committee. And who did they go with? They went with one of the most annoying twerps in politics, gun control activist David Hogg. Remember this guy?
Yeah. Are you ready to go on the offense? Yeah. Are you ready to go on the offense? Yeah. We have to win back our young people. I am the only candidate in this race for any of these positions that is under 30. We had a 20-point shift to the right of our young people. We must show our young people we give a damn about them, that we support them, and we invest in them.
Why was there a 20-point shift, David Hogg? Because you weren't on the platform? Why? Maybe because the Democrats' idea of a man is David Hogg. Maybe that had something to do with it. You know, a wiry, obnoxious twerp. Anyway, let's continue.
I have raised over $11 million in the past year to support the future of our party.
How'd those races go? Never mind.
Because I don't just tweet. I don't just talk the talk. I also walk the walk and I knock the knock in doors across the country. But I'm counting on you in this moment right now.
Yeah, you also lose. I mean, most of the candidates you lose. Most of the causes. Remember, you were going to turn Florida blue, David Hogg? Remember that one? You were going to cost Marco Rubio his political career? You were going to start a competing pillow company to put the MyPillow guy out of business, Mike Lindell? That you were going to keep Ron DeSantis from being elected? Yeah, how'd all those battles go? So again, what a gift. One of the major spokesmen for the Democratic Party in going forward will be David Hogg. Love it. Okay, I told you that while the Democrats are coming to grips with their lowest popularity ratings ever by doing the kind of stuff you just heard me play those videos from, the Trump administration is, again, just dialing it up to an 11. Here is some really good news that happened over the weekend that you might not have heard about because there's so much other news out there swirling around. First, federal employees were told, after we got off the air on Friday, federal employees were told to remove pronouns from their email signatures by the end of business on Friday afternoon. The latest effort in the Trump administration's push to end DEI. Not mend it, end it, which is a great idea because foundationally, DEI is hostile. It's hostile to civil rights. It's hostile to the issue of putting someone's humanity ahead of their race. It's hostile to what this country aspires to. It inverts. It inverts. Doesn't extend. It inverts civil rights. Civil rights is all about minimizing the importance of race in our society. You recognize it, but it doesn't matter. You treat people according to how they act, what they say. DEI is all about magnifying, not minimizing, magnifying race, and then treating people differently because of their race. When you hear people say that DEI is Marxist, what they mean by that is that it uses a Marxist model, a dialectic, where instead of using economic class, you know, the masses and the proletariat, they use white, i.e. oppressor, versus black, i.e. victims. That is how they showcase America. That is what they're all about. DEI just needs to go. Federal employees were notified, quote, pronouns and any other information not permitted in the policy outlined by an executive order must be removed by employee signatures 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday. Again, this was sent to employees earlier on Friday morning. Federal employees with the Department of Transportation received a similar directive. Employees told to remove pronouns from everything, including government grant applications, email signatures, everywhere. Employees of the Department of Energy got a similar notice, told to remove DEI language in federal discourse, communications, and publications. So this is the latest. You remember, on his first day in office, Trump signed a pair of executive orders calling for an end to, quote, radical and wasteful DEI programs. And for women, quote, seeking to restore biological truth to the federal government, close quote. Good for him. And by the way, if you're a federal employee and you don't like it, you have been offered a buyout. Pretty darn generous one. 8 months, wages and benefits. 8 months. Take the spring off. Take the summer off. And take the month of September off. So that's good news number one. Good news number two, over the weekend, President Trump announced airstrikes that were conducted on Saturday in Somalia against ISIS targets, quote, killed many terrorists without in any way harming civilians. The U.S. Africa Command, in cooperation with the government there in Somalia, conducted airstrikes against multiple targets on Saturday and assessed that, quote, multiple ISIS Somalia operatives were killed in the airstrikes and no civilians were harmed. Quote, this morning, I ordered precision military airstrikes on the senior ISIS attack planner and other terrorists he recruited and led in Somalia. Trump wrote, these killers, who we found hiding in caves, threaten the United States and our allies. The strikes destroyed the caves they live in and killed many terrorists without in any way harming civilians. Our military has targeted this ISIS attack planner for years, but Biden and his cronies wouldn't act quickly enough to get the job done. I did. The message to ISIS and all others who would attack Americans is that we will find you and we will kill you. The third piece of good news. Not only did Hamas release one of the few Americans being held in captivity since October 7th, 2023, but the nation of Venezuela, the communist nation of Venezuela, freed six Americans after Richard Grenell, Trump's former national security advisor, met with Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro on Friday, urging him to take back illegal Venezuelan migrants with criminal records in our country. Quote, we are wheels up and headed home with these six Americans. They just spoke to Donald Trump. They couldn't stop thanking him, Grenell wrote on Friday on Twitter X, featured a photo of him and the six Americans. Grenell later posted a photo of him leading the Americans out of the plane with the caption, we are home. God bless these Americans. President Trump chimed in his own social media post, just been informed. We are bringing six hostages home from Venezuela. Thank you to Rick Grenell and my entire staff. Great job. He later added the Americans returned home in great condition. Venezuela also agreed to repatriate using its own airplanes all illegal aliens from Venezuela who we are kicking out of the country, including members of the transnational criminal gang Tren de Aragua. Venezuela previously refused to take them back. They've done a 180. That will now happen. So, what a great weekend. Like I said, every day since November 5th seems like Christmas. Every day, great news like this. And great news, Philip J. Vandervoort III is going to be right around the corner with social media sweep of the morning, social media from socialists. Stay tuned.
Expands across the continent. Cotton heads west in search of...
All right. Feeling the heat. Philip J. Vandervoort III making people feel the heat, I should say. The social media sweep, social media from socialists. What do we got going, Philip J.?
I need to start with some breaking developing news about Trump, Mexico, and tariffs.
Yes.
And then we will get to the socialists on social media. This social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. A little less than an hour ago, 45 minutes ago, Donald Trump on Truth Social posted... He spoke with President of Mexico, Claudia Sheinbaum. Very friendly conversation. She agreed to immediately supply 10,000 Mexican soldiers on the border. Soldiers will be specifically designated to stop the flow of fentanyl and illegal migrants into the U.S. We further agreed to immediately pause anticipated tariffs for a one-month period, during which we'll have negotiations headed by Secretary of State Marco Rubio, the new Secretary of Treasury, new Secretary of Commerce, and then a high-level representative of Mexico. I look forward to participating in these negotiations with President Sheinbaum as we attempt to achieve a deal between our two countries.
Ta-da!
So that was 7:40 Pacific time this morning.
So they call off the tariff?
As it pertains to Mexico, according to this post from Trump, it's on a one-month pause.
And so is the Mexico.
And negotiations will
ensue. Or so is the Canadian,
ensue.
Right?
It doesn't say anything about that.
Oh, wait, no, that conversation's happening later today.
Yeah, based on what I'm seeing here, this seems to be specific to Mexico. But, you know, we'll keep our ear to the ground and maybe more announcements will be forthcoming.
What did John Carlson say earlier this morning?
How about that?
The tariffs will never go into effect. That both Mexico and Canada will come to an accord and will end up with no tariffs and a better border policy and better cooperation for Mexico and Canada.
I'm tired of being right all the time.
It's happening. All right.
That was the translation.
That's right. You'll get tired of the winning. Tired of all the winning.
Key and Peele used to do the Obama anger translator. Right. I'll do the John Carlson
Obama.
I told you so translator. Okay. Now to the socialists on social media. The House Minority Leader for the Democrats is Hakeem Jeffries from New York.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a press conference on Friday. And he cut loose with a line that really set a lot of tongues wagging. Here he is trying to rile up his Democratic supporters.
We are going to fight it legislatively. We are going to fight it in the courts. And we're going to fight it in the streets.
So he was talking about Trump's agenda.
Insurrection.
Yeah, right? Fight it legislatively? Sure. Okay, fine. That makes sense. Fight it in the courts? Okay, yeah. We know that that's part of the strategy.
Well, and then what happened
now.
Over the weekend?
And
all these rallies with all these Mexican flags. Where do all those Mexican flags come from?
Right, in different cities.
Well, probably from Mexico.
Yeah. China.
But the thing is...
probably China.
Yeah. But, yeah, and you notice how quickly these Mexican flags that dwarfed the number of American flags were waving in defiance. In other words, we're here... We're here illegally. We don't care if you don't like it, and we want ICE to go away. They're the ones who need to go away, not us.
Yeah, with Hakeem Jeffries' last line there, and we're going to fight in the streets.
In the streets,
it's a little unclear what he means, but that made a lot of people ask, what are you trying to do, incite a riot? Stuff like that. And then the Senate Democratic leader is Chuck Schumer, and this kind of comes back to the talk about tariffs. And Chuck Schumer posted this over the weekend, so it's going to be a little bit dated now based on what I just told you about Donald Trump's update from the Mexican president. But Senate Minority Leader, Democrat Chuck Schumer posted, "You're watching the Super Bowl this coming Sunday. Wait till Trump's tariffs raise your guacamole and beer prices." So, here's Chuck Schumer trying to pretend like he's concerned about consumer prices once Trump's in power. But he really didn't seem to be too worried about those consumer prices.
If he makes guacamole like he makes a hamburger,
trouble.
I'm
I was
going to
say, is it not I'm a hamburger, okay. A cheeseburger.
His party.
Where you put cheese on a raw burger.
Right, and then set the raw meat on the grill.
Oh, man.
So there's a Chuck Schumer post that is certainly not aging well.
All right.
Just like Chuck Schumer.
Just like Chuck Schumer himself. All right, you are listening to the radio program Record, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. When we return, the prominent NBC news journalist who is out on his ear, and also Harris Faulkner. She's got her own one-woman TV show on Fox News during the day, and it just overtook The View, that ensemble show with like five women in the ratings. That's interesting. That and we get into local coverage. Some very important local stories you don't want to miss right around the corner on the John Carlson Show. Fabulous, legendary Tina Turner on the John Carlson Show. Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right, we'll get to your text line messages in a moment. First, an update for you. The awful aftermath of a savage, brutal attack on a 72-year-old woman in the middle of a day, in the middle of downtown Bellevue, over on 108th Avenue toward Northeast 2nd Street. Actually, between Northeast 2nd and Main Street, there is a strip mall where there's a pet shop. There is an office depot, and there is an Asian shopping grocery store. And this 72-year-old lady had gotten out of her car, was headed to the grocery store when someone came up and viciously attacked her. Here is Michelle Esteban into Ryan Sims here on this story and how this lady was very nearly paralyzed from the brutality of the assault.
Family members are expressing outrage after a brazen robbery left a 72-year-old woman with devastating spinal injuries. That case happened just a few weeks ago in the parking lot of Bellevue's H Mart store, the one that's downtown. And now we are learning just how hurt that victim was. KUMO's Ryan Sims is live from where the attack happened. Ryan, this entire case happened in the middle of the day.
Exactly right, Michelle. It's one of the reasons why the victim's family is just so outraged and upset over what happened here in this parking lot. Yes, the suspect is now arrested and facing charges, but the victim's family has a very pointed message tonight. If it happens to our mom, it can happen to yours.
The mental trauma, she was just shocked out of her mind that this has happened to her.
What started as an outrageous attack now involves the translation of trauma.
She was also thinking, what if I'm paralyzed? I can't move, you know, like, because she couldn't move.
These pictures from the hospital show the result, injury to that woman's spine and bruises all over her body.
Some of the thoughts that were going through her head is like, am I going to die?
All of it as the victim was about to go grocery shopping. According to cops, 18-year-old Madden McGraw set his sights on her and then pounced.
There was like a figure like right here on her left side, and then she felt the tug and like dragging her. That's when she realized like something's happening.
Following the attack, police combed through security footage. It's then that they say they tied this 18-year-old to several crimes throughout Western Washington.
Those people that are like thinking about doing this, thinking they can get away with it, I want them to know, no, you're not going to get away with it.
McGraw is now charged with a slew of crimes, including robbery and several counts of identity theft. Police believe this woman was just one of many older people that he preyed on.
It could have been your mom. It could have been his mom. It could have been my mom. It could have been anyone's mom in broad daylight.
And as KUMO reported this week, police raided McGraw's home and just found a treasure trove of things that they say were stolen. We're talking about dozens of credit cards, stolen keys, even guns. He is now locked up on $250,000 bail.
Yeah, you know what? Add a zero. You should add a zero. This should be $2.5 million bail. And he lives with his father. I'd love to hear the dad explain how his kid could have all these illegal guns in the house, and all these, if you saw the table where all the stuff was arrayed, it's not like this is easily hidden. So I would really love Mr. McGraw to explain what he was doing, where he has been, while his 18-year-old with a criminal background already was amassing all this stuff right there in the house. This is, again, another testament to our juvenile justice system. Yeah, I know he's 18. That's actually good, because now he's going to get hit with adult charges. But it sounds to me like he's been doing this kind of thing for a while. And what do you want to bet? All he would get is diversion. All he would get is counseling. All he would get is, please don't let this happen again. Please, all you know how much this hurts people. You know how this creates fear, right? What is it that makes you, drives you to do this? And once again, what did I tell you about our juvenile justice system? It has created a culture where juvenile criminals are getting more violent and their attacks are increasingly random. So they're not just, you know, going after each other. They are now attacking and nearly killing 72-year-old Asian woman in a parking lot in the middle of the day downtown Bellevue. Enough. I've so had it with the King County prosecuting attorney's office when it comes to juvenile crime. They created this program, then they bragged about it. And, you know, we're so far ahead of all these unenlightened people who don't see that this is the way forward. You know, the goal is zero youth detention. Hopefully, why don't we just close down that juvenile jail, that brand new juvenile justice center? Let's just, you know, we need to move beyond that. And even by their own criteria of success, which is fewer juveniles in custody, even there they have failed magnificently. They've failed. There's like three times more juveniles in custody now because they're so dangerous. They're like this guy. They can't let him out. But like I said, the good news is that he turned 18. He probably should have paid a little closer attention when his birthday was coming up, because now he's going to be looking at some serious time. You're listening to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We got another outrageous crime. This one in Redmond. where a man was saw that someone was trying to steal his car. So he runs out to confront them, and he gets there's two suspects, and he gets his hand inside the window of the front door, and they drag him, and then they shot and killed him in cold blood. Police say they are hunting for a couple of suspects. I have a feeling they have an idea of who they're looking for. Don't know that. Just reading between the lines here. But again, they go, oh, you know, car prowling is, oh, you know, car theft, just a property crime. One of the reasons people get so desperate when people are stealing their cars is frequently that's the most important thing they own, the most valuable thing they own. That's their lifeline to the American dream, to their job, to the to getting to where they want to go. Anyway, we really hope that they get these guys and get them in custody and up on serious criminal charges. Speaking of criminals, Shannon Bream talking to Senator John Fetterman. He's the Democratic senator out of Pennsylvania. It's the guy who had the stroke. Very much a liberal Democrat, but he realized how crazy his party was when they were pro-Hamas, and he said, you should be openly pro-Israel, and you should be wanting to end Hamas, destroy Hamas as a political movement. And then on the issue of deportation of illegal immigrants who are here illegally, while Democrats are promoting and celebrating these rallies where all these illegals and their supporters waving Mexican flags are promising to defy Tom Homan, who is carrying out the deportation program for President Trump, Fetterman tells Shannon Bream here, if the Democrats were smart, they would be helping them.
So what obligations do or don't you think local officials have with respect to the feds and these deportations?
I hope every local official would agree that anyone here, any of the migrants that are here with criminal backgrounds or engaging in criminal behavior, I think they should support that. Now, if ICE comes to round them up, I hope they would provide that kind of support.
How about that? Someone with common sense, but he's an outlier in his own party. Finally, Chuck Todd from NBC used to host Meet the Press. Out at NBC. He has left.
Bye-bye.
Adios.
And will he be missed? Nah. Anyway, here's a quick recap of his legacy. Do you remember the broadcast where he's looking in the camera, literally shaking his finger at the camera at you people out there who wouldn't get vaccinated because of COVID?
Please get vaccinated. If you know someone who's not vaccinated, find a way to convince them to get vaccinated. Literally, the only people dying are the unvaccinated.
What?
And for those of you spreading misinformation, shame on you. Shame on you.
You just spread misinformation.
People are needlessly dying because of your misinformation. Think about it. I don't know how some of you sleep at night who are doing this for a living.
The only misinformation we just heard is that the only people who are dying are the unvaccinated. Completely untrue. That is completely untrue. That was misinformation. That was disinformation, and that was Chuck Todd. But he is no more, not at NBC anyway, whose ratings continue to sag. That is a good thing for this country. It is 48 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock. Wait to hear what your fellow KVI listeners had to say on the text line. Straight ahead as the Commute with Carlson continues, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Yeah, well, the new policy of the federal government when it comes to pronouns for all federal employees on all federal government correspondence, the new pronouns are zero, zip, and zilch. No more pronouns on the signature line. No more pronouns being asked for in federal correspondence. Those days are over. That is what the president has issued. And there are rules and regulations to promulgate that executive order. Okay. Art Issaquah on the comment line. John, I assume a good percentage of these demonstrations throughout the weekend were populated by illegal aliens. Why would they want to help Tom Homan? If they help him, he gets to them all the sooner. Yes. No, I don't think that people who are here illegally want to help him, but the Democrats should be helping, because that's one of the reasons they lost the election, is it was convincingly showed that people who are here illegally were a higher priority than American citizens, that the well-being of illegals took precedence over the well-being of Americans. And this just continues all that. Mike in Snoqualmie just texted about Chuck Todd. It says, NBC News doesn't employ journalists. They employ journal liars. Ooh. During one of his social media sweeps, Philip J., in recognizing that February is Black History Month, told the listeners all about Dr. Daniel Hale Williams, the first doctor to perform a successful heart surgery, first doctor of any race to perform a successful heart surgery back in 1893. And I believe, didn't you say he was one of the first Black physicians, Black surgeons?
To start a private hospital.
Mm-hmm. Nancy and Everett said, you know, we learned about Booker T. Washington, Harriet Tubman, and other notables in school before the Civil Rights Act way back in the 1950s. And I remember learning as a youngster about Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver and Harriet Tubman when I was in school as well. You just wonder why great people like these and Dr. Daniel Hale Williams, whether they're being taught kids now or whether they were set aside to make room for, you know, Ibram Kendi and Malcolm X and Hannah Nicole Jones. Gail in Burien says, hey, we've got snow on the ground here. All right. All the more reason for everyone to be very, very careful. So enjoy the rest of this day. Let's you and me talk again in about 21 hours.